And welcome, henchmen, to a spooktacular episode of Crossover Collision brought to you by the Villains, man. We're going to take two of your most vile and evil and murderous villains in all of fiction, and we're going to break down what they're capable of, and we're going to discuss how a battle plays out between them. If you like the Villains, man, you can check us out over on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. As always, I'm your host with the most, JVD, and with me as always is the mad scientist himself, the Professor Evan the Great. How are you doing on this All Hallows Eve?
I have actually did pretty good for a going from night to days. Well, really not days, more closing shift. I used to work the graveyard shift, so that was more spooky at nighttime. Yeah, so it's good to be back and doing this. The change of everything hopefully can allow me to get more into this as I was a year prior. So we're going to have a lot of fun with this one and doing real good. So what about you?
Well, you know, much like you, I guess for the audience, we've taken a little hiatus due to life changing, as Evan just mentioned, with his job. I'm a dad again, so we're quite busy. And like you just said, changes in the air, because coming soon, in just a few weeks, is Crossover Collision 2021, which I'm excited about. Are you excited about?
Yeah, I'm really pumped. I feel like every year we get more and more interactive, and the inner circle and everybody connected to that and outside of that on all of our social media platforms, there's a lot more buzz. There's a lot more people who kind of getting their claws into this, and I think it's really going to do us well.
So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. About a month and a half ago, we held voting for 10 characters that everyone could choose from, and out of those 10, we're gonna take the top 8, randomly rotate them into a battle, and see how the tournament plays out. On November 12th, we'll have a special to break all that down for everybody with some very special guests. And the following, on the 19th, round one of the quarterfinals will begin. But today, we're not worried about that. We're here to talk about the spooktacular episode of Crossover Collision. Now, we're talking horror today here on Halloween. And we've had our fair share of like horror characters from comic books. We've had Hellboy. We've had Etrigan. We've had Blade. You know, and even we went and covered Jason Voorhees from the Wildstorm comics. But today, we're going to do something a little bit different. Here recently, we've been trying to step out of comic books and use other forms of media. And we're going to do that today with movies, because everybody loves scary movies, right? Everybody loves a good movie villain. Today, we're going to talk about a fight between a man who has a name that the creator hates. He refers to him as the Hell Priest or the Cold Man. And we are talking about Doug Bradley's Pinhead. A very interesting villain. To me, a villain that I find myself falling more intrigued with as I've learned more about him here in the last couple weeks. What do you feel about the character now that you've kind of really dove into him, especially from a guy that used to not like horror movies?
Oh, yeah, for many, many moons, I did not watch anything like that. But I would say the last 5 to 6 years, maybe not 5 to 10 years. I'll get 5 to 10 years. I've really dived more into that genre because things like that, they used to kind of be spooky, but then they become interesting. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. But this character in general, once you kind of dive into it, started reading about him and reading all the old stuff and watching the movies, kind of getting a grasp of the character. He is so much more than your typical horror. He's kind of like I would say a mixture between like sci-fi and horror elements, and the makeup and the way they made him look and everything. It makes him a very, in his background, which we'll get into, a very menacing character, a very dark, sinister character. Who should be feared. So it's going to be interesting to have him into a battleground. And speaking of battlegrounds, last year for our Halloween episode, I was kidnapped. Hopefully this time something like that does not happen, since we got a lot of elements that could make that possible again.
Well, that's what you get for going to Crystal Lake. To me, Pinhead is almost kind of like Dr. Octopus to me. I grew up loving Jason Voorhees, much like I grew up loving Venom. They're very simple characters. But as you get older, you like the more complex characters. That's why I love Doc Ock instead of Venom. This is why I'm loving Pinhead more than I am Jason Voorhees. But anywho, yes. Well, let's move on to his opponent. I know my FHP brethren might give me a little hell for this. No pun intended there on Hellraiser. But we were talking about He Who Shall Not Be Named, the ultimate villain from the Harry Potter series. We're talking Voldemort. So we're talking Pinhead versus Voldemort. Are you a fan of the Harry Potter series, Evan?
I am not a huge fan. I've watched like two of the movies, the first two. And I've actually tried, and I'm going to finish them one day. I've actually read two of the books on Audible, so listen to them. The first two, they say they get better because those are more like children's books, like the first two, and then it gets into a more stable book. But overall, I thought the movies were okay, but I've only seen two of them, but they're not the best. And the books are a lot better, but the first book is really hard to get through for me. That's just me personally. So overall, yeah, it's an okay franchise, but to me, it's not, anywhere near my top fantasy genre that I like going into. So I don't want to bash it too much, but it's less than all the other things I like, but it's not horrible, which I feel that you're going to say, but, it's not on my radar as far as top fantasy things to dive into and read and watch. And, so that's where I'll put that at.
I'm not going to say it's horrible. I know I like to egg everybody, especially in the inner circle, about FHP. But, man, them early ones, like you said, they're for kids, and they're a little harder to choke down. But as they get, as Harry and Ron and Hermione grow older, they get a little bit darker, and they're not as bad. Yeah. I think it's something where these days I'm just going to have to sit and watch them all consecutively and not, like, go see them in random spots with, like, girlfriends that I've had in the past or anything like that. So I'm eventually going to give them another shot, because the more I read up on Voldemort, the more I really like this character.
So, Voldemort's character is very interesting, just to throw that out there.
Yeah, these two guys are about as evil get.
Yes.
So, but we're going to warn you here, as we do on Crossover Collision, we do talk with it about the media that these characters are into and the things that you will see. So there will be spoilers. If this has been spoiled for you at this point in your life, I don't know what's wrong with you. The Hellraiser movies have been going on for the better part of 30 years. The Harry Potter films are like just probably around 20 years. So if you're spoiled, I don't know what to tell you. We're not going to apologize for that. For fights, it's the first time either one of these guys have been on Crossover Collision. And obviously, we are talking about the movie versions of them. Both these guys started off in literature. And I'm going to point something out here for Pinhead, because we're already talking movies. And I don't want people to get confused here, because I really had to search for this information. So obviously, Clive Barker has three universes involving Hellraiser, as in Pinhead. You have the literature, which is its own continuity. You have the movies, which all of his movies are their own continuity. So we're talking like Rawhead Rex, a favorite of mine, Hellraiser, Candyman, Lord of Illusions, stuff like that. They're all their same cinematic universe, is what he says. And then if you start reading the Boom Studios comics, which I read the first run, which was got pretty interesting and pretty dark real fast, it takes place after the first two films, I do believe. Maybe just the first film. But so there's some continuity there if you're interested in any of these. But I do recommend that Boom Studios series. It is written by Clive Barker and Mark Miller. So it does have his own twist, and it's pretty graphic. So viewer discretion, reader discretion is advised when you read those. take that mature label for what it is. Further ado, Mr. Great, please read us the rules of Crossover Collision.
So we have our first rule here is the host are to generate questions regarding specific combat situations between the combatants. While answering or bringing up counter questions, only standard feats, powers, and abilities and equipment seen in the comics can be referenced for this particular episode, also movies and literature. No plot-induced stupidity, plot armor, or MacGuffins are allowed. Therefore, every reference brought up needs to be within reasonability and common throughout the combatant's history. Rule number two, each crossover collision allows no prep time or outside interference from allies of the combatants. Our last rule, rule number three, each host declares who they believe wins the crossover collision by which the combatant has the best chance of winning by death, KO, or incapacitation.
All right, so now we get to go over the powers and abilities, which is my job, and there's quite a bit to cover between both these guys, considering they are both known for magic. You wouldn't think so with Pinhead, but yes, he does have magical-like abilities. And that's who we're going to start with, Mr. Spencer Elliott. For one, he is immortal. He has superhuman strength and durability. He has a high resistance to pain, or you can one may say he is even immune to pain. He has teleportation. He has... Now, it took me a while to pronounce this. I kept looking it up on Google how to pronounce this because it's a Greek word. It's Alcidia Kinesis, which means chain telekinesis. That's what Alcidia means. It's chain, so chain telekinesis. Obviously, if you know anything about Hellraiser, you know what we're talking about. He has evocation, preferably, which we'll reference as pyrokinesis because he can't control fire and cause explosions. He has telekinesis. He has necromancy, transmutation, and he has a fear sense, which I'm going to assume is empathy with a combination of telepathy because he can feel your fear, as in your emotion and your pain. And he can read your mind and see what you're afraid of. So, yeah, I'm going to say that is empathy and telepathy. As for equipment, now, a lot of people may not realize this, but Pinhead does not carry the laminate configuration made by Le Marchand. The box is what summons him and the Cenobites. So it is not an equipment with him, but I figure we'll just go ahead and just throw it out there. But it is too iconic just not to mention this thing. But it is used to summon and dismiss the portal to the labyrinth with which the Cenobites reside in. It can also summon and dismiss the Cenobites. It can be turned into a lozenge or basically a dagger, is what it is called, by the Cenobites. And humans cannot do this. But this renders the magical abilities of its gateway useless. But it's also a magical weapon in that sense that can actually damage the Cenobites. So it's kind of a two-weapon, a double-edged sword for the Cenobites there. So other than that, I'm not going to count chains as weapons for Pinhead because he can summon them at will. But it is his primary way of attacking. Let's talk about Tom Riddle, a.k.a. Voldemort's powers and abilities. For one, he is also immortal, too. Due to his 6 or 7 Horcruxes. He has spellcasting abilities with known magic and the dark arts to sum them up. It is necromancy, telekinesis, charms, elemental magic, memory modification, apparition, occlumency, legomancy, possession, transfiguration, wards, and defenses. I don't know about you, Mr. Great, but when I was doing these, I was like, how do I relate these to D&D and Pathfinder?
It's yeah, definitely.
I mean, none of these guys are Elminster by any chance, but anyways, he also uses the 3 unforgivable curses, which is the killing curse, which is Avada Kedavra, which is kind of abracadabra, the Krutaxish curse, which is basically I'm not even going to go with that, and the Imperius curse. So if you know Harry Potter, you know exactly what we're talking about. He also has wandless and nonverbal casting. If you know anything about Harry Potter, most of your spellcasters need a wand to cast spells. Not Voldemort. He is that awesome. He also has wand versatility. He's one of the few wizards who can actually use other people's wands to a great deal of effectiveness. We've seen that with the Elder Wand in the films. He's the first wizard to fly without a broomstick, so he can fly on his own without any type of object needed. And he also has parcel tongue, which allows him to talk to snakes. Voldemort's equipment obviously has a wand. It is made from yew wood with a phoenix feather core and is the twin brother of Harry Potter's wand. His wand is 13.5 inches in length. I don't know about you, but with your Voldemort research, the world of Harry Potter is very detailed.
It's very detailed, inside and out.
I mean, just like going over everything, I would find myself looking through more and more stuff as I was going over Voldemort. I'm like, what's this? Man, look how detailed this is. What is this? Look how detailed this is. And that's kind of was like, you know what? Maybe I really need to read these and watch them once again. But let's go ahead and go to the tell of the tape between these two. Mr. Gray, we'll start you off first, as always. Who has the advantage in strength?
For strength, I think just reading the characters, I think that Pinhead is stronger in all physical categories. Definitely in strength. I'm not saying like he's like super strong, but he's definitely a lot stronger than a normal person. So that being said, I would have to give him strength.
And hit Pinhead strong enough to actually launch him through concrete. So they actually are pretty strong. But regardless, yes, he does have the advantage in strength. I mean, look, we play D&D. What wizard is known for their strength?
They usually can get it from other means.
That's right. Now, you said you believe that he was strong, basically has the advantage in all physical capabilities. So you think that he has the advantage in durability as well?
Yeah, just because, for one, he's just more durable. He can take a lot of punishment. But the main thing is, I literally don't think he feels pain. Like a normal person. It's like on a, you know, way up there, different everything. Like he can withstand a lot more than anybody I've ever seen. So that's where I would put him at. The fact that I don't think it slows him down in any of his things that he does. From what my research has gathered, looking at different videos, looking at different things, like I try to dig in deep, and I feel like his pain tolerance is out. It's insane if it even has pain.
Well, it is. They touch that in the comics. If you said you were going to read those, and it's pretty interesting the tortures they put Spencer Elliott through, and the Leviathan is so impressed with his ability to not feel pain. And all the tortures they put him through. It's pretty awesome. But, you know, their sadus masochist is Cenobite, so it's pain for pleasure. But physical durability, I agree. But here's the thing. You also have to think that Voldemort has wards and magical defenses, too, that he can use. So depending on what we're talking about, I mean, it could go either way. But physical, yes, for Pinhead. Magical, Voldemort. Now, what about speed? You said you thought he had an advantage in all the physical stuff. What about speed?
With these guys, it's kind of funny because their speed is a lot different than normals.
They're not Pinhead running around everywhere.
They like teleport around. One can fly. I really think it depends on where they are. But I thank Voldemort just because he can fly without a broom. So he has all them different directions he can go. But you got teleportation, you got spells. Both of them could do spells that can put them in different places. So I don't really know on this one. It's kind of a toss up.
See, I think Voldemort has it just because he can fly. And he flies pretty fast.
Yeah. He is really fast.
You keep saying spells. Do you think Pinhead has spells or he has supernatural ability like a demon or a devil in D&D that don't really have spells, you know?
Yeah, hit supernatural abilities that give him the same access of what a spell would do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm pretty sure that Pinhead has the advantage with melee. None of these guys are known for melee combat, but it's the fact that he is stronger. He was also in the military, even though he doesn't really remember that. Here's the interesting one, ranged combat. Who has the advantage in ranged combat? We have chain telekinesis, pyrokinesis with Pinhead. He's shown telekinesis to throw things like sharp objects. You've got all the spell casting of Voldemort, who also has telekinesis. I mean, who has the advantage here?
I really think Voldemort has the advantage in range because he has been in countless duels and using magic as a ranged weaponry most of the time, using a wand to fire with. I think that kind of gives him an edge because he not only does he just shoot others, he's like going against a lot of people that can do similar things. He's just better than them. And then being able to do that a lot at an earlier age, he's got that much experience going in. But then you've got Pinhead, who is a supernatural ability to do a lot of those things and to really freak his opponent out. But I think Voldemort, because of all the duels that he had to do to get to where he's at and his ability to fly around while doing it now, I think he has an edge.
That's well said. The duel thing, I didn't even think about it like that. And I'll just add in that he is more effective at a longer range, too.
Yeah.
And he's more versatile. Because most time with Pinhead, you're getting, chain telekinesis. I'm not even going to try to say the fancy word for it. So let's go ahead and talk about weaknesses real quick. Pinhead, holy or magical weapons, such as morphing the lambic configuration into a dagger, because it is a magical weapon. Apparently, supernatural creatures are also his weakness. We know that the other Cenobites have the ability to injure each other. We see that with Chenard when he gets turned into a Cenobite in the second one, and also when Angelique gets turned into a Cenobite. And also the Elysium configuration. I'm not even going to go into that. If you want to watch, I do believe that's Bloodlines, where entire spaceship seems to be the Lamnit configuration and basically burns him, I guess, with the light of heaven. It's very strange, but we don't have to worry about any of that here. Voldemort, this is a crazy one, and besides being arrogant, is the inability and the power to love. Because apparently that's what saved Harry Potter and rebounded the death curse back at him. And he had no love from any parents. His mother, was a prostitute or some weird stuff like that. But, I don't think that's going to come into play here because Pinhead doesn't worry about love at all.
That is true.
So, all right. So
except for torturing people. He may love that.
There is a great love for the torture there. And he gets his pain boners off of that. So, but without further ado, we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we get back, myself and the professor are going to discuss some battleground questions between Pinhead and Voldemort. Did the Iron Fist Netflix series leave a bad taste in your mouth? Are you caught up in the hype of Shang-Chi and the Legends of the Ten Rings? Have you ever wondered what these characters' true origins and adventures are like, but you don't have the time to read through hundreds and hundreds of issues? Then subscribe to the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, where I, JVD, traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artist in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. Each week, I break down a story arc and discuss the good and the bad within the pages to save you hours of reading through comics so you can focus on the best of which each character has to offer. New episodes drop every Wednesday for you to listen to on your way to your local comic book shop to pick up your pull list. So, Evan, before we get started here with Voldemort versus Pinhead, anything you want to throw out before we dive into these battleground questions with these two characters?
I thought about this earlier today while sitting in I had to do some work on my car. And these things come to me as you're sitting in one of those little rooms, like in the dealership. And I was like, these two would never team up by no stretch of imagination. I think that they would hate each other as much as they hate the people they're after. So I'll just throw that out there.
I think you might be wrong on that. I could see these two teaming up because I was thinking that at work today while I was bored. Because think about it. Voldemort is evil. And all he wants to do is kill Harry Potter. And he could have Pinhead help him as long as he can destroy Harry Potter. And what better way to get rid of Harry Potter's soul than to have it brought to hell by Pinhead?
He may, but it's just the way they're both similar in how bad evil they are, but the way they go about it is totally different. one is definitely like on a different spectrum with Pinhead going for capturing people, turning people over, you know, all that, you know, torturing and everything. And then you got Voldemort, who's all about learning how to become more powerful so he can destroy Harry Potter. So it's kind of interesting, but I could see where they would work, but I just think that they would not, they wouldn't be able to get along very long.
The one thing I wanted to bring up here, and I think this is very important to this, because most people may not realize this, but because they might just watch the Hellraiser movies. And like I said, Clive Barker said all his movies are like a universe. You know, it's a universe for his movies. So we do know there are magic in these movies. We have heard Pinhead talk about magics. We do know that the Revolutions is about demons giving people magic. And these magics are very powerful, apparently, in Lore of Illusions. Swan has enough magic to kill a god, per se. And one of my personal favorite, Rawhead Rex. We know that magic is used to vanquish him before the movie starts in the past and in the end of the movie. So we do know that magic hurts very powerful demons such as Pinhead. Now, it's, you know, the question is, we're going to wind up talking about a lot during this, is how powerful is Voldemort's magic compared to certain things in regard to Pinhead. So, and that really was to me what made this this battleground, this whole fight interesting when we come up with our questions, because I cross-referenced a bunch of different stuff to get some answers. Hence, like the Rawhead Rex series. Mm-hmm. You don't see Pinhead fight anybody with magic, but we know that Rawhead Rex is a demigod, per se. He's a very powerful demon, and we know that magics do hurt him, but there's specific things with the magics that have to be in play for it to actually work against him. So this is going to be pretty interesting. So the first question that we have is, can Voldemort's mastery of oculimpsy ward away Pinhead's ability to sense one's fears? Like I was talking about, he's an empath when it comes to fear and pain. He can sense that, and he can read into your mind what you fear to bring pain to you. So what do you have?
Yeah, this is a very this is a crazy question, because when you go into what Voldemort does, and you kind of see all the levels of success he had at a younger age and how much he's combined with that and all the duels that he's been in, you would think that his wards, because he hid from a lot of powerful wizards and stuff like that through the movies, so you know that he has some powerful ward ability, some powerful magical casting. I actually think that will help him tremendously here. I actually think that he is going to be strong enough using this to give him an advantage. So that's where I lie on it at the moment. I think that when you look at everything he's went through, how fast he did it, that his mastery of that ward, I think it really slows Pinhead's ability down to sense his fears. I actually don't think he's going to be able to do it. I think that Voldemort can hold it off.
So basically, we know that Legilimency is the mind reading and Oculimency is the defense for, and that's kind of what we're talking about. So you mentioned how long he had remained hidden and whatnot. And we know that some of these wizards, and I'm just going to name some of them. Obviously, we know Dumbledore. He's the most powerful wizard in, you know, Hogwarts. You know, a rival to Voldemort. We have Professor Snape, who I would say is the probably second most powerful wizard at Hogwarts. And Gellert Grindelwald. So he's been able to hide himself with this spell. Let's see. Once finding he was one of Voldemort's Horcruxes, Harry Potter could block him out by feeling love. That's that weakness of love. But we don't have to worry about that here. So like I said, even the most powerful wizards in Hogwarts could not penetrate his mind. Now, here's what's interesting about this is, in return, Voldemort is so skilled with, you know, mind reading. he can cause his victims extreme pain, and we've seen him make Harry Potter beg for mercy during all this, right? So any other creature, because I thought, oh, this is cool, and then I thought, wait, no, this isn't going to work, because if you cause Pinhead excruciating pain, he's going to get a pain boner because he's a sadist masochist. So that would not work at all in this. And that's something that we have to think about during this battle is, you know, every time you inflict pain on Pinhead, is it really hurting him? You know, you've really got to dig into something that's actually going to critically wound Pinhead or actually destroy him. So, and that this was on this question, that's the first thing that really got me change my mind on a bunch of stuff and maybe look in a bunch of different directions. So let's move on to the second question. How well does Pinhead's supernatural durability hold up against Voldemort's spellcasting? And that kind of plays into what I was just talking about. Like, you're going to have to really look into more powerful stuff that Voldemort can do and kind of figure out, can it actually hurt Pinhead?
Yeah, this is another question that's kind of makes this contest is very difficult to figure out how things could happen. Because when you break it down, we both kind of, you know, think that he don't feel pain. Pinhead does not. So him not feeling pain, and then if he did feel pain, it would be complete opposite effect. So I think Voldemort needs to find out a different way to win this contest, which is going to be very difficult. But the question at hand is how his durability holds up. I think his durability holds up very well. And this could give, and this particular, the way we break down battlegrounds, could give advantages and disadvantages. Because if it's holding up, that means Voldemort's going to try different angles, different spell casting, different things to try to win this matchup or to get out of this situation. And by him changing things up, anything he does that would cause some pain or get into the mind or anything like that, it could backfire for him into giving him a false sense of he's winning, which is not going to be good. So I think the question at hand, that his durability holds up supreme, like really good. And it's going to put Voldemort a bunch of like different tactics on what he can do here. And one of those tactics might work. He might eventually figure it out. Okay, this is what I need to go to. But I think going through his wheelhouse, he's going to run into some things that backfire.
All right. So I am going to dig into said wheelhouse, as you had mentioned. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is basically these energy beams we have seen him unleash with his wand, because they are freaking destructive.
They're super powerful.
Yeah, so we see him, like, beam battling with Harry. And Harry is so overwhelmed, he has to literally divert the blast to the ceiling while they're in somewhere in Hogwarts. And it actually causes the entire roof to come crashing down. So therefore, you know, it is capable of destroying a massive amount of concrete. That says quite a bit. Now, we know when he uses this beam clash with Dumbledore, the energy off of it is extremely powerful, and it is actually shattering all these stone walls and pillars around them as it's arcing off their beam lock. Very Star Wars-ish with, you know, cross blades with lightsabers. This one, this beam here, seems to be the beam that brought down the magical shield protecting Hogwarts. Now, the intensity of it, I'm not going to say when he attacked the shield, the intensity was much more because it wore him out. But even though he was wore out, he continued his assault on Hogwarts. And this is some of the stuff I was just referencing. Now, here's the thing. All these Death Eaters and all of the evil wizards were just blasting the shield, and no one was doing nothing until Voldemort showed up and destroyed the whole thing with one powerful beam from his wand. So that's pretty powerful. You have a spell that was disintegrating people that on touch, that was blocking hundreds and hundreds of blasts. Voldemort brought down with his very powerful beam. So the question is, could it bring down somebody like Pinhead? And we do know magic hurts Pinhead, so how powerful is this beam compared to the supernatural durability of Pinhead? That's a question you have to ask yourself there. Now, we don't have any proof that he has any type of defense against this Pinhead. I mean, we've seen him be bulletproof. The Cenobites themselves, I don't think that's going to matter here. So there's a question that you actually have to basically figure out yourself. But, so, I was trying to find a something that, you know, might be more of a, you could cross-reference a little bit more. So, I'm going to talk about Fire Fiend, which is a spell. This is where you see Voldemort kind of with a beam clash with Dumbledore before he kind of burps the ball of fire and turns it to the giant snake that attacks Dumbledore. That's called Fiend Fire. Apparently, Fiend Fires are uncontrollable when you summon a creature like this, which shows you just how in control Voldemort is, and they incinerate everything in sight. So I'm like, okay, could they incinerate Pinhead? Well, we've seen Pinhead tank futuristic fire from a plasma gun repeatedly. It did not hurt him at all. Now, is plasma as hot as what this spell is? Who knows? Well, so I did some digging on that. How powerful is Fiend Fire? Because these are the two I found that I could actually connect here. Now, I was going to do some scientific number for plasma for heat. And I wasn't worried about it because there's one thing I wanted to point out with Fiendfire that you could compare it to. So we know that Voldemort has these Horcruxes, which are very powerful magical items. And Evan, you play D&D and all these other swords and sorcery games as much as I do. To destroy a powerful magical item takes something extremely powerful, right?
Yes.
Fiendfire is one of the spells that actually does this. It is strong enough to, it's destroyed one of Voldemort's Horcruxes. I forget the name of the wizard that done it, but it actually killed him in the process, and it destroyed one of the Horcruxes. So I was assuming, and so I was kind of picturing that Horcruxes are almost like the equivalent to a laminate configuration puzzle box. So I would think, you know, if you can compare the two, you might be able to compare how Fiendfire could deal some damage to Pinhead in that situation. Because if it can destroy a powerful magical item, and they're kind of sentient, by the way. And because we've seen the Horcruxes defend themselves and curse people that touch them or get too close to them. And the Fiendfire actually destroyed one of these. So can it destroy somebody who is of a supernatural type of being like Pinhead? Who knows? That's one of the things that I kind of really got into cross-referencing. Was you going to say something?
That's very interesting and a very well thought out way of kind of giving me a little bit of the way I would think that would happen based on magic working against items, and that's a very interesting twist that kind of helps me unravel some of this.
Yeah, that I thought that was a good cross-reference there for that question. Let's move on to the third question, unless you have anything else.
No, I'm good. Cool.
All right. Can Voldemort's defensive magic protect him against Pinhead's Alcidia kinesis, or chain summoning telekinesis, whatever the Greek word for that is. So does he have anything that could protect him from these dozens and dozens of chains Pinhead can summon?
So a lot of the defensive magic that you would have would be like different defensive force fields, defensive, what do they call it? Like when they're pushing, you know, air away, outside of your body, or some type of shield that absorbs certain type of damage. So he has all of those at his arsenal. The problem, I think, with this, and I could be wrong, is these are not, when he summons these chains, they're not just regular chains. They're summoned from it like a different dimension. He could just make them pop up different places. And I'm wondering if that element of it is going to not be recognized by the defensive magic that Voldemort puts into place. And I think that with the magic he's putting, everything and Harry Potter world, like when you do magic, it's to block a different style of magic or a different, you know, material, or that's the way I've always seen it. So I think if you're doing this, these are not going to be your typical chains, because they come from a different source of energy. So I think that the magic he normally would use to protect him, he would get caught off guard the first time these chains came in, and then he might be able to alter it to block it. So I think Pinhead has an advantage in the beginning of this, because I don't know if the defensive wards that he knows would block that type of magic, because it's not the same type of magic. It's a supernatural ability. So that's where I'm at on it. I think that he would have an advantage at the beginning, and then he would figure out, okay, I got to use this kind of magic to withstand those. So he could get him with it in the first shot.
All right, so kind of diving into these chains and whatnot, we know that as long as there's darkness or shadow around, he can summon these chains. And if these two fight, they're going to be fighting in like at nighttime or somewhere where there's a lot of shadow. That's just the nature of both of these guys, right? So, and he can summon dozens of them at once from any direction and almost at any length. And if, and even though we're not talking comics, if you want to know how powerful they are, one of them ripped a speeding subway from the tracks.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, we do know that he can cause electricity to surge through them and make you explode. We have seen him do that. And we do know that they are strong enough to shatter and punch through concrete. So they, not only are they hooking you, they are punching through you. So, so Voldemort, we know that he is quick to disarm wizards. He does it with his wands. He does it with a wave of his hand. So there, could he actually use that to ward away a chain coming at him? Is he fast enough to do multiples at one time with this? We also know that his telekinesis is quite powerful, which you can also counter that with Pinhead's own telekinesis. But we've seen him move multiple stones around. We've seen him shove dead bodies around, like the body of a giant. A massive giant. And we've also seen him lift and throw other wizards with ease. So is his telekinesis powerful enough to block dozens of chains coming from him to him at one time? Now we also know he has teleportation. That's a quick way to escape everything. But you also have to understand who else has teleportation in this fight. Pinhead. So there's a counterbalance to that. We also know that Voldemort's flight speed is pretty fast. So the only issue with that is, as long as there's shadow and chains around, darkness around, Pinhead can summon these barbed chained hooks from anywhere. It's just that Voldemort's got to have a spot where he can fly to where there's nothing, I'm going to assume, solid that would give off shadow and darkness for them to come after him from. Now, here's an interesting one. We've seen him transmutate his cloak into tendrils to reach out and grab Harry Potter with different links. So maybe he could use these to counteract all these chains, but I don't know if he would have enough to like block enough chains. So, and that's all with magic. They don't have to be verbal. He can use them with his hands. But here's the interesting thing with Hellraiser's Pinhead's chains, all right? He doesn't have to attack you with them. He can bind you with them. I'm talking from hand to foot. We've seen him where he binds people with their mouths open. So as long as there is no, if you can't gesture with your hand, you can't use a wand, and you cannot speak, even though you need nonverbal, it'd be very hard for Voldemort to cast the spell if Pinhead could bind him with his chains. Now, I'm not saying that Pinhead has ran into spellcasters before, but these guys are roughly actually around the same age. So, and I'm sure Pinhead's been around enough to know that, hey, you know, if you're fighting some type of spellcaster, you need to silence them. So, you know, a chain, you know, holding open the jaw and the mouth would probably do so. So there is some defenses there that actually might be able to help Voldemort against Pinhead's summoning of chains. Anything you want to add to that?
I don't believe so. That's going to be a very important aspect of this battle.
So, because, you're looking at his primary way to attack and what your defenses are for that. So, all right. the big question, the one question that everybody is really wanting to know, and we're going to do it right now as we wrap up the final question here, is can Pinhead survive the killing curse?
Well, this is a great question to end on, and I think I got my answer on where I think I'm going to lie, and this has to do with everything. So, Pinhead in general, we talked about, we don't think he feels pain. But the problem with this is this magical curse, it's, to me, it would, I mean, you could feel pain with it, but to me, the curse itself is not meant to do pain. It's meant to kill you. So I think if he hit him with this, it wouldn't be pain he's feeling. It'd be life gone. I don't know how that would transpire for a being of his power level as Pinhead, but I actually think if he did the killing curse on Pinhead, he would win. I think that Pinhead, the problem with that is I don't know how easy it's going to be to hit Pinhead with that. I don't know if he's going to use that right away. But if he does get to a circumstance where he thinks he can use it and he actually gets through his defenses, I think it could probably kill him.
All right. So I did some pretty good research on this because I got some interesting stuff for this. So let's talk killing curse. It's believed the spell rips the soul from the body. Considering there's no clear evidence of how one dies when struck by the curse, that is what leads wizards to believe this. So Voldemort, this is when he tried to kill infant Harry Potter, his killing curse rebounded off of him. And when it killed him, it said it was like having his conscience torn and from his body. So he's the only person to literally kind of survive it. So, and what did it do? Well, it killed him. And if you know anything about Horcruxes, they're like phylacteries in D&D. They hold the soul. So he would know, and I would say that his words are true. Now, we know that for the killing curse, there's no counter curse for it. And we know that spells can't block it unless they're extremely powerful spells. I'm going to say just right off the bat that Pinhead probably has nothing that we're aware of that would block such a thing. And we also know that striking a solid object will either disintegrate it or basically disintegrate part of a bigger object that it touches. So it's almost in a way kind of like a disintegration blob from like D&D. So like if you have a soul, it destroys a soul. But if it's a physical object, it disintegrates it. So there's even a more interesting question. If it doesn't destroy Pinhead's soul, if he has one, is it strong enough to disintegrate him? Or the part of him that it hits? So, because we've never seen it really hit a living thing without outright killing it. So there's some hypothesis you'll have to work on. So let's talk about Pinhead here. So the question is, does Pinhead have a soul? So in Hellbound, which is the second Hellraiser movie, Christy Cotton showed the Hell Priest a photo of his time as a human as Elliot Spencer, regaining his memories and realizing that he was once human. Chouinard reverts him to his human form, which allows him to presumably be killed. And when he does this, his soul is sucked into the soul, the pillar of souls. So therefore, yes, Pinhead does have a soul. The end of Hellraiser 2 and the beginning of Hellraiser 3 say this, because he is still human. Therefore, he still has a soul. The Cenobites are not true demons. They are humans who have become demonic. So, now, so this is interesting. He hits him with the killing curse, right? He has a soul. Now, the question is, what happens when he hits him with the killing curse and removes his soul? Because Chouinard, when he was turned to a Cenobite and split him, this is what had happened. So, on Hell on Earth, the next movie, when Chouinard separated Pinhead, he separated his negativity, his aspects, his negative part of his being. He separated that from Elliot Spencer, making Elliot Spencer human again. And he took the essence of basically what the Hell Priest was. And I'm just going to dive in a little bit to the comics, even though we're not using them, but this makes sense. There always has to be a hell priest to lead the Cenobites. So that essence is there. It has to, you know, be fed to a human. But it is a entity. So, and why do we know that it's an entity? Because once it is freed from the Pillar of Souls, it's a walking, living creature. It's a supernatural entity. Now, the problem with this is, on Hell on Earth, when he is separated from the Pillar of Souls, he is free from the laws of the Cenobites, because the Cenobites in the Labyrinth, they have an order that they follow. Because, you know, we see Kirsty Cotton work this, Kirsty Cotton work this to her advantage all the time by making deals with the Cenobites, like she did with her Uncle Frank in the first movie. You know, she's like, they came for her. She's like, I can give you Frank. They just need to prove that Frank was Frank, even though they knew he escaped. So, and he wasn't bound by these laws anymore. This entity wasn't a pinhead, and he was much more powerful. So the question here is, because and the only way they had to actually, I would say in layman's terms, to dumb him down is Elliot Spencer had to re-merge with the entity to become Pinhead again, which in a sense made him weaker. So the question is, here is, he hits him with a killing curse. We know he has a soul. Does it destroy the soul? Or does it separate the beings? So, what we're going to do,
go ahead,
is we're going to wrap this part up. We're going to take our final break, and we're going to discuss how all this plays out. And we're going to find out who wins between Pinhead and Voldemort.
Coming to you live from whatever podcast you're currently listening to, it's your boy Jay West with my co-host Mac East from the We Get Dub podcast.
What up, nerds? It's me, Mac East, and we got a badass anime podcast for you. We got hot sauce, we got hot takes, we got booze and banter.
And you can listen to us on all major platforms.
The We Get Dub podcast hits harder than a Goku gut punch.
And welcome back to the Judge's Decision here on Crossover Collision with myself, JVD, and the Mad Scientist, the Spooky Soulless Ginger, Evan the Great. So we just broke down the Tale of the Tape and some battleground questions here from Pinhead versus Voldemort. If you're one of them jerks that just likes to skin to the end of the episode just to see who we think wins, you're missing out on quite a bit on this episode. Wouldn't you say so? Because there's some interesting stuff brought up.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of interesting stuff.
You sound very worried about your answer here. And with that, what do you got, Evan? Break down what you've thought about and the things we've laid out, and give me your process on who you think wins here.
Okay. First off, these are my opinions, so don't scold me if some of them are not fitting to your beliefs of how these characters operate. But in my opinion, the whole time I'm trying to figure out how Voldemort can hurt Pinhead. And we go through all the first question, if, you know, he could sense his fear. Then we go into the supernatural durability, holding up, spell casting. And I kind of think that Pinhead has a pretty good advantage in, you know, through those, you know, trying to think, okay, he's definitely holding his own. He's holding his own. I can't figure out anything. And then when we get to the last question, which is what we kind of ended on, At first, I'm like, okay, like I said, I agree with, if he hits him, if the killing curse gets put onto Pinhead, I think that he would not be able to withstand that, and he would perish. And then JVD kind of brought up all the stuff he researched about the soul and how that all works. And what I kind of gathered out of that, and this is my belief, that Voldemort has a bunch of pieces of his soul and all of his, like, fleckeries, I guess you could call them. Which means his body, I don't know how much of a soul is in it at that point. So if he hit the killing curse on Pinhead, I think he would win, in my opinion, this contest. But he might not win the aftermath, because I believe that Pinhead has to be the leader of the, what do they call him? The
Cenobites?
The Cenobites. I believe that there's a chance that if he removed that, as they talk about in that comic, and then some of the other knowledge that you was looking up, that they need a leader I think it, why would it not go and attach itself to Voldemort? Because he is super powerful.
Evan's creating plots here. He's writing a story.
And so that's where I'm at. I think that the Killing Curse works and Pinhead would get, he would lose the battle. Voldemort would win, but the aftermath would be, I think that his soul, once it got ripped from his body, would go into, wow, Voldemort. And there we go. I created a story, but I feel that's what would happen.
So who are you saying wins?
Oh, that's, in my opinion, Voldemort wins because he does win first. Like, he would hit him with that Killing Curse. And that's the only thing I think would work on him, because it's not a physical attack. It's removing the soul or ripping it free. I think he wins via that. And then the soul would leave the body, which the body would fall to the ground and he would win. But I think then it would look for a new host. And I don't know if it really does this, but since it needs a leader, I just think that the chance that it does that would be, yeah, it would probably go and possess him, which would be insane. I don't know if it works like that, but the way I'm seeing it, it kind of would in that circumstance.
So he kind of gets venomized in a way.
Yeah, and I could be dead wrong on the way that works, but I feel like if you're going to get into something, why not get into something that has its parts already separated from it? So, yeah, I hope I'm right on all my knowledge on that, but I think there's a good chance that could happen. But anyway, the overall victor would be Voldemort, because he would win, because he would hit the Killing Curse. And then afterward, there's a chance that he would get hit with this soul that he removed with his own spell, which is funny because that's how he kind of lost to Harry, is whenever it rebounded and he hit himself with it. So, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, the end of this is interesting.
Unless the Killing Curse destroys the soul. But in my assumption, it rips it out of the body. And then as you went through, it either does that or destroys a being. So if it rips it out of the body, that happens at the end. If not, so either way, Voldemort, he wins, in my opinion.
Yeah, the what it does to the soul is very important here. Like, does it destroy the soul? Because we know his soul isn't all the Horcruxes. That's why he doesn't die. Which, yeah, like, if you destroy a lich, the soul goes to the phylactery, and then the lich, reconstitutes itself. Much like if you actually destroy Pinhead, he just reconstitutes in hell.
Yes.
So okay.
Ooh, there's that's interesting. So if his soul is, we're going on to the Evans writing his own book now. If his soul does go to, it regenerates in hell or whatever, or his body does, and it comes back for his soul that's now in Voldemort, this could be a part two.
Well, he's got to be summoned back with the Lambda configuration before he can come back. So, true. But we're assuming that he's, on the battlefield. So here's my thing. I completely agree with what you say. The Killing Curse would extract the soul, and there's a question of the soul. But here's the thing. There's a lot you have to think of before then. It's when, Voldemort's thing is the Killing Curse. That's what he uses. He just uses it indiscriminately. He does not care who it is. The only, him battle, wand blasting Dumbledore and Harry Potter is almost like a hatred thing, like a pride thing, you know what I mean? Because otherwise, he just attacks everybody else with Killing Curse indiscriminately. He doesn't care. So, but I think if you see something like Pinhead, that's different. But here's the thing. You have to ask yourself, what happens first here? What's quicker, him getting off the Killing Curse or him being attacked with all the chains at one time? You have to factor that in and how this would play out. Because can Voldemort withstand the pain of the chains? Because here's the thing. If he gets hooked and strung up by Pinhead and he can fight through the pain, he does not have to have a wand or use his hand to cast a spell. He can do it non-verbally. So could he still use a Killing Curse then? I'm pretty sure he could. Now, here's the thing. Killing Curse, boom, tears a soul out. Now, if we're going, but you go by the end of Hellbound, when Chouinard does this, the only thing that leads to the sequel is the soul enters the Pillar of Souls when the Cenobites show up at the end of the movie. It's there. That's the only reason it happened. So you have to ask yourself, what happens to the negative essence of Pinhead if it separates him, because it just went to the pillar at the end of the movie. Does it just sit there? Does it look for a host, or is it completely destroyed? Because the pillar would be almost the same, imprison the soul. What happens to the soul then? Does it get sent straight to hell? Is it obliterated? So just for the fact that we really don't know and don't have legit answers for that, because of the MacGuffin of the Pillar of Souls at the end of Hellraiser 2, I'm going to say that Voldemort edges this out. Only on the we don't know essence, because the Pillar of Souls imprisoned the soul. We don't know what would have happened if the Pillar of Souls wasn't there.
So
Voldemort wins, like, on a technicality.
And on top of that, this being our spooky episode, our Crossover Collision podcast is now forever cursed, because we always say they get teleported in. So now, in this teleported in, Pinhead soul is inside of here and it can't get out.
Or it's destroyed. You don't really know. It's interesting, though, because here's the thing, like, the MacGuffin is what imprisons his soul. Well, yeah. There is nothing here to imprison his soul afterwards. So,
yeah, so funny.
Is it destroyed? Does it get sent to hell? You know, is Elliot Spencer's disembodied spirit sitting there? I mean, or does the, you know, the soul go right back into Elliot? Does it go into Voldemort? We really don't know that. So that technicality makes me say that Voldemort has a clear way to actually momentarily stop Pinhead, which would count like as an incapacitation by our rules, and he would win.
This is great.
This is
a lot of Twitter questions.
Yeah, this turned out a lot better than what I expected. So, but with that, we're going to wrap up this spooky edition of Crossover Collision. We hope you have a happy Halloween. We hope that you tune in here in the next couple weeks for the Crossover Collision Tournament and get involved and pick your champion to win the entire tournament. But wrapping up the episode, I'm JVD. You can follow me on Twitter over at VillainsDemand.
And I'm Evan the Great. Follow me on Twitter at EvanTheGreatTVD.
If you like the Villains of Man, please go check us out over on Facebook, over on Twitter, and over on Instagram. If you like our music, check out tabletopaudio.com. They have music for all of your nerdy needs. You can check us out over on the Apocalypse or the Innerd Circle or the Comics List over on the Podchaser app. But if you're looking at this episode, down in the show notes of the episode is the archives for Crossover Collision over on thevillainsman.com. And while you're there, check out the rest of our podcast where we play D&D or the defunct Fandom Fusion podcast. Still some good stuff there. But wherever you can, please rate the episodes. We really appreciate that. But remember, guys, wherever you see them on social media, please like, please comment, let us know what you think of the episodes. We would really like to talk to everybody, especially about the way this one ended. But in the end, guys, remember, support your favorite podcasts. Support your local comic book shops. Get out there and get that candy and party down the night. But be safe. Keep reading comics, guys.